Beauty. Beauty stood at the foot of the bed, her hands clasped to her neck, her buttocks throbbing with a warm pain that felt so much better now than the spanking she had lately received that it was almost pleasure. She had, for the moment, stopped crying. She had only just pulled down the covers for the prince with her teeth, her hands clasped behind her neck, and then with her teeth taken his boots to the edge of the room. And now she waited for further commands, trying to watch him, though her eyes were cast down, without his realizing it. He had bolted the door, and he was sitting on the side of the bed, and his black hair, loose and curling at his shoulders, gleamed in the light of the tallow candle. His face was very beautiful to her, perhaps because in spite of the size of the features, they were all rather delicately molded. She did not know for certain. Even his hands enthralled her. The fingers were so long, so white, so delicate. She was terribly relieved to be alone with him. The moments below in the inn had been such an agony to her. And even though he had brought the wooden paddle with him and might spank her much harder with it than that dreadful girl, she was so glad to be alone with him that she could not be afraid of it. She was afraid, however, that she hadn't pleased him. She searched her mind for faults. She had obeyed all his commands, and he understood how difficult it was for her. He knew completely what it meant for her to be stripped naked and revealed to everyone, to be helpless and made public, and that this surrender of which he spoke could come in acts and gestures long before it could come from her mind. But no matter how hard she tried to excuse herself, she could not help but wondering if she could have tried harder. Did he want her to cry out more when she was spanked? She was uncertain. Just thinking of that girl spanking her in front of everyone made her cry again, and she knew that the prince would see her tears, and he might wonder why now, when she'd been told to stand still at the foot of the bed, she was crying. But the prince seemed deep in thought. "This is my life," she told herself, trying to calm herself. "He has awakened me and claimed me. My parents are restored, their kingdom is theirs again, and more significantly, life is theirs again, and I belong to him." She felt a great relaxation when she thought these things, and a stirring in herself that seemed to make her sore and throbbing buttocks feel suddenly warmer. The pain made her so shamefully aware of that part of her body. But then as she squeezed her eyes against these soft and slow tears, she looked down at her swelling breasts and the tiny, hard nipples, and felt that same awareness of herself there too, just as if he'd slapped her breasts, which he hadn't done in a great while. And she felt softly bewildered. "My life," she struggled to understand. And she remembered that in the afternoon in the warm forest, when she had been walking before his horse, she had felt her own long hair on her buttocks, brushing them as she walked ahead of him. And she had wondered if she looked beautiful to him. And she had wished that he would pick her up then, and kiss her, and caress her. Of course, she had not dared to look back. She couldn't imagine what he would have done had she been so foolish as to do that. But the sun had thrown their shadows ahead of them, and she had seen the shadow of his profile, and felt such a pleasure that she was ashamed of it. And her legs had felt weak, and there had been the oddest feeling in her. Something she had never known in her earlier life, though perhaps in her dreams. She was awakened now, at the foot of his bed, by his low but firm command. "Come here, my darling." He motioned for her to kneel before him. "This shirt is to be opened down the front, and you will learn to do so with your lips and teeth, and I will be patient with you," he said. She had thought it would be the paddle. And, very relieved, she went almost too quickly to obey. pulling the thick tie that closed the shirt at his throat. His flesh felt warm and smooth to her. Men's flesh. So different, she thought. And she quickly pulled loose the second tie and the third. She had a struggle with the fourth, which was at his waist, but he didn't move. And then, when she was finished, she bowed her head, her hands as before on the back of her neck, and waited. "Open my breeches," he said to her. Her cheeks flamed, she could feel it. But again, she didn't hesitate. She pulled the fabric forward over the hook until the hook slipped out and let it go. And now she could see his sex, bulging there, painfully twisted. She wanted suddenly to kiss it, but she didn't dare and was shocked at her impulse. He had lifted it free. It was hard. She thought of it between her legs, filling her, rough and too big for her virginal opening, and of that terrible pleasure which had suffused her and wasted her the night before. And she knew she was blushing furiously. "Now go to the stand in the corner," he said, "and bring back the basin with water in it." She almost scurried across the floor. Several times in the inn he had told her to move fast, and though she had hated it at first, she now did it instinctively. She brought the basin in both hands and set it down. There was a cloth in the water. "Wring out the cloth tightly," he said, "and bathe me quickly." She did as she was told at once, staring in amazement at his sex, its length, its hardness, and the tip of it with its tiny opening. She had been so sore from it yesterday, yet that pleasure had paralyzed her. Never had she guessed at such a secret. "Now, do you know what I want of you?" the prince said gently. His hand lovingly stroked her cheek, lifting her hair back. She ached to look at him. She wished so much he would command her to look into his eyes. It terrified her, but after the first instant it was so wondrous to her. His expression, that handsome and almost delicate face, and those black eyes that seemed to accept no compromise. "No, my prince, but whatever it is," she started. "Yes, darling, you are being very good. I want you to take it in your mouth, stroke it with your tongue and your lips." She was shocked. She had never thought of this. She thought suddenly, cruelly, of who she had been. A princess, and she thought of all her young life before she had fallen asleep, and she almost gave a little whimper. But this was her prince who was commanding her, not some dreadful person she was being given to as a wife who might have demanded this of her. She closed her eyes and took it into her mouth, feeling its huge size, its hardness. It nudged at the back of her throat, and she pushed up and down on it as the prince guided her. The taste of it was almost delicious, and it seemed a salty liquid in tiny droplets came out into her mouth. And then she stopped because he had said it was enough. She opened her eyes. "Very good, beauty. Very good," said the prince. And she could tell he was in pain with his need suddenly. It made her feel proud. And there was in her, even in her helplessness, a sense of power. But he had risen and was guiding her to her feet. And she realized as she straightened her legs that that debilitating pleasure had caught hold of her. She felt for a moment that she couldn't stand, but to disobey him was unthinkable. Quickly she stood straight, hands behind her neck, and she struggled to keep her hips from going into some slight, humiliating movement. Could he see it? She bit her lip again and felt its soreness. "You've done marvelously well today. You've learned so very much," he said tenderly. His voice could be so soft and yet so firm at the same time. It made her feel almost drowsy, that pleasure was melting inside of her. But then she saw that he was reaching for the paddle behind him. She let out a little gasp before she could stop herself, and she felt his hand on her arm, taking her hands away from the back of her neck and turning her around. She wanted to cry out, "What have I done?" But his voice came low, crooning in her ear. "And I've learned a very important lesson myself, that pain softens you, makes it easier for you. You are infinitely more malleable from the spanking given you in the inn than you were before it." She wanted to shake her head, but she didn't dare. The thought of all those who had seen her spanked tormented her. She had been turned so those at the windows could see her buttocks and between her legs, and the soldiers could see her face, and it had been excruciating. Well, it would only be her prince now. If only she could tell him, for him, anything, but those others were such punishment. She knew this was wrong. It was not what he wanted her to think, what he was trying to teach her. But now she couldn't think. He was at her side. He held her chin in his left hand, and he had told her to fold her arms behind her back, which was difficult for her. It was worse than clasping her hands behind her neck. This position arched her body, forced her breasts out, and made her breasts and face feel painfully naked. She moaned slightly as he lifted her hair and folded the great mane of it over her right shoulder, away from him. It covered her arm, but he pushed it away from her nipples and pinched both of them hard between his finger and thumb, lifting her breasts and letting them fall naturally as he did so. Her face was positively smarting, but she knew what was to come would be worse. "Spread your legs ever so slightly. You must be firmly planted on the ground," he said, "so that you can withstand the blows of the paddle." She wanted to cry out, and through her tightly pressed lips, her sobs sounded very loud to her. "Beauty, beauty," he crooned. "Do you want to please me?" "Yes, my prince," she cried, her lip trembling uncontrollably. "Then why are you crying so when you haven't even felt the paddle yet? And your buttocks are only a little sore? Why, the innkeeper's daughter had little strength." She cried almost bitterly, as if to say in her soft, wordless way that it was all true, but it was so difficult. He held her chin firmly now, bracing her whole body. And then she felt the first crack of the paddle. It was an explosion of stinging pain on the hot surface of her flesh, and the second spank came much more swiftly than she had thought possible. And then there was the third and the fourth, and in spite of herself she was crying aloud. He stopped and gently kissed her all over her face. "Beauty, beauty," he said. "Now I give you permission to speak. Tell what it is you would have me know."
"I want to please you, my prince," she struggled. "But it hurts so, and I've tried so hard to please you."
"But my darling, you please me by bearing this pain. I explained to you earlier that punishment would not always be for a transgression. Sometimes it would be for my pleasure only."
"Yes, my prince," she cried.
"I shall tell you a little secret about the pain. You are as a tight bowstring, and the pain loosens you, makes you soft as I want you to be. It is worth 1,000 little orders and scoldings, and you must not think of resisting it. Do you know what I am saying? You must give yourself over to it. With each crack of the paddle, you must think of the next, and that it is your prince doing it to you, giving you this pain."
"Yes, my prince," she said softly.
He lifted her chin again without further ado and spanked her hard again and again on the buttocks. She felt her buttocks growing hotter and hotter with pain, and the cracks of the paddle sounded loud and somehow shattering to her, as if the sound itself were as dreadful as the pain. She could not understand it. When he stopped again, she was breathless and almost frantic in her tears, as if the torrent of blows had so humiliated her it was far worse than even a greater pain would have been. But the prince folded her in his arms, and feeling his rough clothing against her, and his hard, naked chest, and the strength of his shoulders, she felt such a soothing pleasure that her sobs grew soft and open-mouthed and languid against him. His rough breeches were against her sex, and she found herself pressing against him only to have him guide her gently back as if silently reproving her. "Kiss me," he said, and such a shock of pleasure went through her at the closing of his open mouth over hers that she was almost unable to stand, letting her weight fall against him. He turned her toward the bed. "That's enough for tonight," he said softly. "We have a hard journey tomorrow." And he told her to lie down. It occurred to her suddenly that he was not going to take her. She heard him moving to the door, and this pleasure between her legs became suddenly an agony. But all she could do was cry softly into the pillow. She tried to keep her sex from touching the sheets because she feared that if it did, she could not resist some undulating movement. And she felt sure he was watching her. Of course he'd meant her to feel pleasure, but without his permission? She lay rigid, afraid, crying. A moment later, she heard voices behind her. "Bathe her and put a soothing ointment on her buttocks," the prince was saying. "And you may talk to the princess if you like, and she to you. You are to treat her with the utmost respect," said the prince. And then she heard his steps dying away. She lay too afraid to look behind her. The door was closed again. She heard steps. She heard the cloth in the basin of water. "It's me, dearest princess," said a woman's voice. And she realized it was a young woman. A woman her own age, and could only be the innkeeper's daughter. She buried her face in the pillow. "This is unbearable," she thought, and suddenly, with all her heart, she hated the prince. But she was far too humiliated to think of it. She felt the girl's weight on the bed beside her, and just the rough cloth of her apron brushing against Beauty's buttocks caused the sore and stinging flesh to ache more keenly. She felt as if her buttocks must be enormous, though she knew they were not, or giving off some terrible light with their redness. The girl would feel their heat. This girl, of all girls, who had tried so hard to please the prince by spanking her, far harder than the prince had realized. The wet cloth stroked her shoulders, her arms, her neck. It stroked her back and then her thighs and legs and feet. The girl carefully avoiding her sex and the soreness. But then, after the girl had wrung out the cloth, she touched the buttocks lightly. "Oh, I know it hurts, dearest princess," she confided. "I'm so sorry, but what could I do when the prince commanded me?" The rag was rough on the soreness, and Beauty realized this time that the prince had left her with a score of welts. She moaned, and though she loathed this girl with a violent feeling she'd never had for anyone else in her brief life, the cloth nevertheless felt good to her. The moist cloth was cooling her. It was like the gentle massaging of an itch. And Beauty grew quiet as the girl continued to bathe her in a gentle, circular motion. "Dearest princess," the girl said, "I know how you suffer, but he is so very handsome, and he will have his way. There's nothing to be done about it. Please talk to me. Please tell me that you don't despise me." "I don't despise you," Beauty said in a small, spiritless voice.
How could I blame you or despise you?
I had to do it. And what a spectacle it was. Princess, I must tell you something. You may be angry with me, but maybe it will be a consolation to you.
Beauty closed her eyes and pressed her cheek into the pillow. She did not want to hear it, but she liked the girl's voice, its respect and gentleness. The girl did not mean to hurt her. She could feel that awe in the girl, that humility Beauty had known in all her servants all her life. It was no different, not even with this one who had held her over her knee in a tavern and spanked her in the presence of crude men and villagers. Beauty pictured her as she remembered her from the kitchen door, her dark, curly hair in ringlets about her little round face, and those big eyes full of apprehension. How fierce the prince must have seemed to her. Why, she must have been terrified that at any moment the prince would order her stripped and humiliated. Beauty smiled to herself, thinking of it. She felt a tenderness for the girl, and for her gentle hands which were now bathing the hot, aching flesh so carefully. "All right," Beauty said. "What is it you want to tell me?"
"Only that you are so lovely, dearest princess, that you have such beauty. Even as you were there, why, how many who seem beautiful could have kept their beauty in such a trial? And you were so beautiful, princess."
Over and over she said this word, beautiful, clearly reaching for other words, better words she did not know.
"You were so graceful, princess," she said. "You bore it so well. With such obedience to His Highness the Prince."
Beauty said nothing. She was thinking of it again, of how it must have seemed to the girl. But it gave Beauty such a frightful sense of herself that she stopped thinking of it. This girl had seen her so closely, had seen the redness of her flesh as it was punished, and had felt her writhing uncontrollably. Beauty would have cried again, but she didn't want to. For the first time, through a film of ointment, she felt the girl's naked fingers on her. They massaged the welts.
"Ooh," the princess gasped. "I'm sorry," said the girl. "I'm trying so to be gentle."
"No, you must go on. Rub it in well," sighed Beauty. "It feels good, actually. Maybe it's that moment when you take your fingers away." How tried to explain it. Her buttocks flooded with this pain, itching with it, the welts, little hard, pebble-like bits of pain, and those fingers pinching them and then releasing them.
"Everyone adores you, princess," the girl whispered. "Everyone has seen your beauty, with nothing to disguise it or hide your defects, and you have no defects. And they are swooning over you, princess."
"Is that really so, or do you say it to console me?" asked Beauty.
"Oh, it is so," said the girl. "Oh, you should have heard the rich women out in the inn yard tonight, all of them pretending they weren't envious, but all of them knew that stripped, they couldn't hold a candle to you, princess. And of course the prince was so beautiful, so handsome and so..."
Yes, sighed Beauty.
The girl had coated the buttocks now and was putting even more ointment into the flesh, and she worked some of it into Beauty's thighs, her fingers stopping just before the hair between Beauty's legs. And again, with fierce annoyance and shame, Beauty felt that pleasure coming back. And with this girl! Oh, if the prince were to know it, she thought suddenly. She couldn't imagine him being pleased, and it suddenly occurred to her that he might punish her any time she felt this pleasure without his giving it to her. She tried to put it out of her mind. She wished she knew where he was now. "Tomorrow," the girl said, "when you go on to the prince's castle, the road all along the way will be lined with those who want to see you. Word is spreading all through the kingdom."
Beauty gave a little start at these words. "Are you sure of it?" she said fearfully. It was too much to think of suddenly. She remembered that peaceful moment in the afternoon forest. She had been alone ahead of the prince and had somehow managed to forget the soldiers following him. And suddenly to think of people all along the road waiting to see her. She remembered the crowded village streets. Those inevitable moments when her naked thighs, or breasts even, had been brushed by an arm or the fabric of a skirt. She felt her breath halt. "But he wants this of me," she thought. "Not just that he see me, but that all see me. It gives the people such pleasure to see you," he had said tonight as they entered this little town. He had prodded her on up ahead of him, and she had been crying so fiercely as she saw all about her those shoes and boots from which she dared not look up. "But you are so lovely, princess, and they will be telling their grandchildren about it," said the tavern girl. "They cannot wait to feast their eyes upon you, and you will not disappoint them, no matter what they have heard." "Imagine that, never disappointing anyone." The girl's voice trailed off as though she were in thought. "Oh, I wish I could follow you to see it." "But you don't understand," Beauty whispered, unable suddenly to contain herself. "You don't realize." "Yes, I do," said the girl. "Of course I do. I've seen the princesses when they come through in their magnificent gowns covered with jewels. And I know how it must feel to be opened to the world as if you were a flower. All of their eyes like fingers prying at you. But you are so splendid, finally, princess. And so rare. And you are his princess. And he has claimed you, and all know you are in his power and must do as he commands you. It is no shame to you, princess. How could it be? With such a great prince to command you? Oh, do you think that there aren't women who would give up everything to take your place? If only they had your beauty?" Beauty was startled by this. She thought about it. Women giving up everything, taking her place. It had not occurred to her. She remembered that moment in the forest. But then she remembered being spanked in the inn, and all of those others watching. She remembered sobbing helplessly and hating her buttocks propped up in the air and her legs open and that paddle coming down again and again. Finally, the pain was the least of it. She thought of the crowds on the road. She tried to picture it. It would happen to her tomorrow. She would feel this drenching humiliation, this pain. But all those people would be there to witness her humiliation, to amplify it. The door had opened. The prince had come into the room, and the little tavern girl jumped up and was bowing to him. "Your Highness," the girl said breathlessly.
"You've done your work very well," said the prince.
"It was a great honor, Your Highness," said the girl.
The prince came to the bed. And clasping Beauty's right wrist, he drew her up out of the bed and stood her beside it. Obediently, Beauty looked down, and not knowing what to do with her hands, quickly brought them to the back of the neck. She could almost feel the prince's satisfaction.
"Excellent, my darling," he said.
"Isn't she lovely, your princess?" he said to the tavern girl.
"Oh, yes, Your Highness."
"Did you talk to her and console her as you were bathing her?"
"Oh, yes, Your Highness. I told her how much everyone admired her and how much they wanted to—"
"Yes, to see her," the prince said. There was a pause. Beauty wondered if they were both looking at her, and suddenly she felt herself naked in the sight of both of them. It seemed one or the other she could bear, but both of them staring at her breasts and sex was too much for her. But the prince embraced her as if seeing that she needed embracing, and gently squeezing her sore flesh, sent another soft shock of shameful pleasure through her. She knew her face was red again. She had always blushed so easily. And were there other ways in which he could tell what his hands did to her? She would cry again if she could not conceal this mounting pleasure.
"Down on your knees, my darling," said the prince with a little snap of his fingers.
In a shock, Beauty obeyed, seeing the rough floorboards before her. She could see the prince's black boots and then the crude leather shoes of the serving girl.
"Now, approach your servant and kiss her shoes. Show her how grateful you are for her devotion to you."
Beauty didn't stop to think of it, but she felt her tears come again as she obeyed, depositing each kiss on the worn leather of the girl's shoes as gracefully as she could. Above, she heard the girl's murmured thanks to the prince.
"Your Highness," the girl said, "it is I who want to kiss my princess. I beg you."
The prince must have nodded, because the girl fell to her knees and, stroking Beauty's hair, kissed her upturned face with great reverence.
"Now, you see there the posts of the foot of the bed?" the prince said to the girl.
Beauty, of course, knew that the bed had high posts which held a coffered ceiling over it.
"Tie your mistress to those posts with her hands and legs quite wide apart, so that as I lie down I can look up at her," said the prince. "Tie her with these satin bands so her skin won't be injured. But tie her very firmly, for she must sleep in this position, and her weight must not pull her loose."
Beauty was stunned. She was in a delirium as she was lifted to stand at the foot of the bed. She obeyed pliantly as the girl told her to spread her legs. She felt the satin go tight around her right ankle, and then it firmly bound her left ankle. And then the girl, standing before her on the bed, bound the princess's hands high on either side of her. She was spread-eagled, looking down at the bed, and with terror, she realized that the prince must see how she suffered. He must see the shame of the dampness between her legs. Those fluids she could neither check or conceal, and turning her face into her arm, she whimpered softly. But the worst of it was that he did not mean to take her. He had tied her here out of reach of himself so that as he slept, she must look down on him. Now the girl was dismissed, secretly depositing a little kiss on Beauty's thigh before she left. And Beauty, crying softly, realized she was alone with the prince. She did not dare to look at him.
"My beautiful, obedient one," he sighed. And to her horror she felt, as he drew near, the hard handle of that dreadful wooden paddle nudging her moist and secret place, so cruelly exposed by her open legs. She struggled to pretend this was not happening, but she could feel that revealing fluid, and she knew the prince knew of her tormenting pleasure.
"I have taught you much, and I am so very pleased with you," he said. "And so now you know a new suffering, a new sacrifice for your lord and master. I could soothe the burning craving between your legs, but I shall let you suffer it and know the meaning of it, and that only your prince can give you that relief you long for." She couldn't control her moan, even though she muffled it against her arm. She feared that at any moment she might move her hips in helpless, humiliating entreaty. He had snuffed the candles. The room was dark. Beneath her feet she felt the mattress give with his weight. She leaned her head against her arm and felt secure in the satin bonds as she let herself hang there. But this torment, and there was nothing she could do to alleviate it. She prayed the swelling between her legs would die away as the throbbing in her buttocks was cooling and dying away. And then, Falling to sleep, she thought calmly, dreamily almost, of the crowds awaiting her on the roads to the prince's castle. The castle and the great hall. Beauty was breathless and flushed as they left the inn, but it was not so much on account of the crowds that lined the village streets, nor those she would see ahead following the ribbon of road as it ran through the wheat fields. The prince had sent couriers ahead, and as Beauty's hair was dressed with white flowers, he told her they would reach his castle by afternoon if they were to hurry. "We shall be in my kingdom," he announced proudly, "as soon as we are on the other side of the mountains." Beauty could not quite anatomize the feeling this aroused in her. But the prince, as if sensing her strange confusion, kissed her full on the mouth before mounting his horse, and said in a soft voice so that only those around them could hear, "When you enter my kingdom, you shall be mine more completely than ever. You will be mine beyond reprieve, and it will be easier for you to forget all that went before that time, and devote your life to me only." And now they left the village, the prince walking his magnificent horse just behind Beauty as she made her way quickly over the warm cobblestones. The sun was hotter than before, and the crowds were very great. The farmers having all come to the road, and people were pointing and staring, and standing on tiptoe all the better to see, as Beauty felt the soft gravel under her feet, and now and then tufts of silken grass or wildflower. She walked with her head up as the prince commanded her, but her eyes were half closed, and she felt the cool air soothing her naked limbs, and she could not stop thinking of the prince's castle. Now and then a low voice from the crowd would make her suddenly and painfully aware of her nakedness. And even once or twice, a hand shot out to touch her thigh before the prince behind her cracked his whip immediately. Finally, they entered the dark, wooded pass that led through the mountains. And there were only occasional clusters of peasants here and there, peeping out from the thick-limbed oaks. And a mist lay upon the ground. And Beauty felt herself drowsy and soft even as she walked. Her breasts felt heavy and soft to her, and her nakedness felt oddly natural. But her heart became a tiny hammer when the sunlight streamed ahead to reveal an ever-widening green valley. A great cry rose from the soldiers behind her, and she realized that indeed the prince was home. And up ahead, across the sloping green, she saw upon a great precipice overhanging the valley, the prince's castle. It was far greater in size than Beauty's home, a wilderness of dark towers. It might enclose a whole world, it seemed, and its open gates yawned like a mouth before the drawbridge. Now from everywhere the subjects of the prince, mere specks in the distance growing ever and ever larger, ran toward the road that wound down and then up again before them. Riders came over the drawbridge and rode toward them with a blast of trumpets, their banners streaming behind them. The air was warmer here, as if this place were protected from the sea breeze. It was nothing as dark as the narrow villages and forests through which they had passed, and Beauty could see everywhere the peasants dressed in lighter and brighter colors. But they were drawing ever nearer to the castle, and in the distance Beauty could see not the peasants whose admiration she had received all along the road, but a great crowd of magnificently dressed lords and ladies. She must have uttered a little cry and bowed her head, because the prince came up alongside of her. She felt his arm gather her close to the horse, and he whispered, "Now, Beauty, you know what I expect of you." But they had already reached the steep approach to the bridge, and Beauty could see it was just as she feared. Men and women of her own rank, and all clad in white velvet trimmed in gold, or gay in festive colors. She dared not look, and felt the blush in her cheeks again, and for the first time was tempted to throw herself on the mercy of the prince and beg him to conceal her. It was one thing to be shown to the rustics who praised her and would make a legend of her, but she could already hear the babble of haughty speech and laughter. This was unendurable to her. But when the prince dismounted, he ordered her down on her hands and knees and told her softly that this was how she must enter his castle. She was petrified, her face burning, but she fell quickly to obey, glimpsing the prince's boots to her left as she struggled to keep up with him in crossing the drawbridge. Through a great, dim corridor she was led, not daring to raise her eyes, though she could see rich gowns and shining boots all around her. Lords and ladies were bowing to the prince on either side of her. There were whispers of greeting and kisses being thrown, and she was naked, moving on her hands and knees as if she were only some poor animal. But they had reached the mouth of the great hall, a room far more vast and shadowy than any in her own castle. An immense fire roared on the hearth, though the sun streamed warm through high, narrow windows. It seemed the lords and ladies pressed past her, flowing silently along the walls and towards the long wooden tables. Plate and goblets were already set. The air was heavy with the aroma of the supper. And then Beauty saw the queen. She sat at the very end upon a raised dais. Her veiled head was encircled with a gold crown, and the deep sleeves of her green gown were trimmed in pearls and gold embroidery. Beauty was led forward by a quick snap of the prince's fingers. The queen had risen, and now she embraced her son as he stood before the dais. "Tribute, mother, from the land over the mountains, and the loveliest we have received in a long time, if my memory serves me. My first love slave, and I am very proud to have claimed her." "And well you should be," said the queen, in a voice that sounded both young and cold. Beauty dared not look up at her, but it was the prince's voice which frightened her most. "My first love slave." She remembered his puzzling commiserations with her parents, the mention of their service in this same land, and she felt her pulse quicken. "Exquisite, absolutely exquisite," said the queen. "But all the court must have a look at her. Lord Gregory," she said, and made an airy gesture. A great murmur rose from the court gathered around, and Beauty saw a tall, gray-haired man approach, though she could not see him clearly. He wore soft leather sock boots, turned down at the knees to reveal a lining of the finest miniver.
"Display the girl."
"But mother," the prince protested.
"Nonsense. All the common people have seen her."
"We shall see her," said the queen.
"And should she be gagged, your highness?" asked this strange, tall man with the fur-lined boots.
"No, that is not necessary.
Though punish her surely if she speaks or cries out."
"And the hair. She is shielded by all this hair," said the man.
But he was now lifting Beauty, and immediately had her wrists clasped over her head. As she stood, she felt herself hopelessly revealed and could not prevent crying. She dreaded a reproof from the prince, and she could see the queen all the better, though she did not want to see her. Black hair showed beneath the queen's sheer veil, hanging in ripples over her shoulders, and her eyes were black as the prince's eyes.
"Leave her hair as it is," said the prince, almost jealously.
"Oh, he will defend me," Beauty thought. But then she heard the prince himself give the order.
"Mount her on the table for all to see."
The table was rectangular and stood in the center of the room. It reminded Beauty of an altar. She was forced to kneel on it, facing the thrones where the prince had taken his place beside his mother. And quickly, the gray-haired man placed a large block of smooth wood beneath her belly. She could rest her weight on it, and she did, as he forced her knees wide apart, and then stretched out her legs so her knees didn't touch the table at all. Her ankles bound by leather to the edges. Now her wrists were treated the same. She kept her face hidden as best as she could, weeping.
"You will be silent," said the man icily to her, "or I shall see that you cannot be anything else. Do not misunderstand the queen's leniency. She does not gag you only because it amuses the court to see your mouth as it is, and to see you struggle with your own willfulness."
And now, to Beauty's shame, he raised her chin and placed beneath it a long, thick wooden chin rest. She could not lower her head, though she lowered her eyes, and she saw all the room about her. She saw the lords and ladies rising from the banquet tables. She saw the immense fire. And then she saw this man, too, with his thin, angular face and gray eyes that were not as cold as his voice, but for the moment seemed even to evince tenderness. A long shudder went through her as she contemplated herself, spread out, yet mounted so that all could inspect even her face if they chose, and she tried to conceal her sobs by pressing her lips together. Even her hair was no covering, for it fell evenly on either side of her face and cloaked no part of her. "Young one, little one," said the gray-haired man under his breath, "you're so frightened and it's useless." There seemed a little warmth in his voice. "What is fear, after all? It is indecision. You seek some way to resist, escape. There is none. Do not tense your limbs, it's wasted." Beauty bit her lip and felt the tears sliding down her face. But she was soothed by his speaking to her. He smoothed back the hair from her forehead. His hand was light and cold, as if he were testing for a fever. "Now, be still. Everyone is coming to see you." Beauty's eyes glazed over, but she could still see the distant thrones where the prince and his mother were talking to one another quite naturally. But she realized all the court had risen and was moving towards the dais. The lords and ladies were bowing to the queen and the prince before turning and coming towards her. Beauty squirmed. It seemed the air itself touched her naked buttocks and the hair between her legs, and she struggled to lower her face demurely, but the firm wooden chin rest would not yield, and all she could do was drop her eyes again. The first ladies and lords were very near, and she could hear the rustle of their clothes and see the flash of their gold bracelets. These ornaments caught the light of the fire and the distant torches, and the dim image of the prince and the queen appeared to flicker. She let out a moan. "Hush, my darling dear," said the gray-eyed man, and suddenly it was a great comfort that he was so near to her. "Now, look up and to your left," he said now, and she could see his lips spread into a smile. "You see?" For one instant, Beauty beheld what was surely an impossibility. But before she could look again or clear the tears from her eyes, a great lady came between her and this distant vision, and with a shock, she felt the lady's hands upon her. She felt the cool fingers gathering her heavy breasts and twisting them almost painfully. She trembled, trying desperately not to cry out, for others had gathered around her, and behind her she felt a pair of very slow and calm hands parting her legs even more. And now someone touched her face, and another hand pinched the calf of her leg almost cruelly. It seemed her body was all concentrated then in its shameful and secret places. There was a throbbing in the tips of her breasts, and those hands felt cold as if she herself were burning. And now she felt fingers examining her buttocks and prodding even at that tiny and most concealed of openings. She couldn't help but moan, but she kept her lips tightly shut, and the tears fell down her cheeks. And for one instant she thought of nothing but what she had glimpsed an instant ago before the procession of lords and ladies had intercepted her vision. High up along the wall of the great hall, on a broad stone ledge, she had glimpsed a row of naked women. It had not seemed possible, but she had seen it. They were all of them young like herself, and they stood with their hands clasped behind their necks as the prince had taught her to do, and their eyes were down, and she could see the glow of the fire on the curl of pubic hair between each pair of legs, and the swelling pink nipples of their bosoms. She could not believe it. She did not want it to be so, and yet if it were so, well, again, only confusion. Was she all the more terrified, or was she glad that she was not the only one enduring this unspeakable humiliation? But she could not even think of this, shocking as it was, for the hands were all over her. She had uttered a sharp cry to feel them touching her very sex, and smoothing the hair there. And then, to her horror, as her face burned and she shut her eyes tight, she felt a pair of long fingers gliding into her sex and widening it. It was still sore from the prince's thrusts, and though the fingers were gentle, she felt that soreness again. But the most excruciating part was being opened like this and hearing their soft voices now as they talked of her. "Innocent, very innocent," said one, and another that she had very lean thighs and that her skin was resilient. That seemed to produce laughter again, that light, tinkling laughter, as if all of this were but the greatest amusement. And Beauty realized suddenly that she was straining with all her might to close her legs, but it was quite impossible. Those fingers were gone, and now someone patted her sex and pinched shut the hidden little lips, and Beauty squirmed again, only to hear the laughter coming now from the man beside her. "Little princess," he said gently in her ear, leaning over so she could feel his velvet cape against her naked arm. "You cannot hide your charms from anyone." She moaned as if she were trying to appeal to him, but his finger touched her lips. "Now, if I have to seal your lips, the prince will be very angry. You must resign yourself. You must accept. It is the hardest lesson, compared to which the pain is really nothing." And Beauty could feel him raising his arm so that she knew the hand that touched her breast now was his. He had imprisoned her nipple and was pressing it rhythmically. At the same time, someone stroked her thighs and her sex, and to her shame she felt, even in the midst of this degradation, that disgraceful pleasure. "That's it, that's it," he comforted her. "You must not resist, but rather take possession of your charms, that is, let your mind inhabit your body. You are naked, helpless, and all will enjoy you and what you can do. By the way, I should tell you that your squirming only makes you more exquisite. It is very lovely, except that it is so rebellious. Now, look again. Did you see what I pointed out to you?" Beauty made a soft sound of assent and fearfully raised her eyes again. It was as she had seen before, the row of young women with their eyes down and their bodies as vulnerable in display as her own. But what was it she felt? Why must she be subjected to so many confusing feelings? She had thought herself the only one so displayed and humiliated, a great prize for the prince whom she could no longer see. And was she not displayed here in the very center of the hall? But then who were these prisoners? Would she only be one of them? Was this the meaning of the odd conversation that had passed between the prince and her father and mother? No, they could not have served like this. She felt an odd mingling of torrential jealousy and comfort. It was a ritual, this treatment. Others had suffered it before. It was fixed, and she was all the more helpless. She felt herself soften as she thought of it. But her lord, the gray-eyed one was speaking.
Now, for your second lesson. You have seen the princesses who are tributes here. Now look to your right, and you shall see the princes.
Beauty looked to the other side of the hall as best she could through the shifting figures about her. And there, on another high ledge, in the ghastly shadow light of the fire, stood a row of naked young men, all of them in the same position. Their heads were bowed, their hands behind their necks, and they were all of them very handsome to look at, as beautiful each in his own way as the young women of the other side. But their great difference lay in their sex, for their organs were erect and hard to a one, and Beauty could not take her eyes off this sight, for they appeared to her even more vulnerable and subservient. She knew she had made a little noise again because she felt the Lord's finger on her lips, and she sensed almost from the air itself that she was now being left by the lords and ladies. Only one pair of hands remained, and these she felt touching the tenderest flesh around her anus. She was so frightened by this, for almost no one else had touched her there, that involuntarily she struggled again, only to have the gray-eyed lord stroke her face again gently. There was a great commotion in the room. Beauty could just catch the aroma of cooking food and dishes being brought in, and now she saw that most of the lords and ladies were seated at the tables, and there was much talking and lifting of cups, and somewhere a group of musicians had begun to play a low, rhythmic music. It was full of horns and tambourines and the strumming of thick strings. And Beauty saw that the long file of naked men and women on either side was moving. "But what are they?" she wanted to ask. "To what purpose?" But now she saw the first of them appear amid the crowd, carrying silver pitchers with which they filled the goblets at the table, always bowing when they passed the queen and the prince. And she watched them, forgetting herself for the moment with great absorption. The young men had softly curly hair cut at the shoulders and neatly combed so that it framed their lean faces. And never did they raise their eyes, though some seemed to move in obvious discomfort from the hardness of their penises. How she could tell this discomfort, she was not sure. It was their manner, a manner of bearing tension and desire, with no expression for it. And as she saw the first of the long-haired girls bending over the table with her pitcher, she wondered if she too felt this same softly agonizing pleasure. Beauty felt it now just looking at these slaves, and she felt a quiet relief that, for a moment, she herself was unobserved. Or so she thought. Because she could sense a restlessness in the room. Some were rising and walking about, perhaps even dancing to the music. She could not be sure. And others had gone to gather near the queen, their goblets in hand, regaling the prince, it seemed, with stories. The prince. She caught a clear glimpse of him, and he smiled at her. How regal he looked. His black hair glossy and full. His long, shining white boots stretched out on the blue carpet before him. He was nodding and smiling to those who addressed him. But now and then, his eyes moved to Beauty. But there was so much to see, and now she felt someone was very near her and touching her again. And she realized that a line of dancers was just forming to one side of her. There was a reckless air to things. Much wine was being poured. There were great eruptions of laughter. And then, quite suddenly, she saw far to her left a young naked boy drop his pitcher of wine, and the red liquid run out on the floor as others hastened to clean it. At once, the lord at Beauty's side clapped his hands, and Beauty saw three exquisitely dressed pages, no older than the naked boys themselves, rush forward and seize the boy and hold him up quickly by his ankles. This brought a loud round of applause from those lords and ladies nearest the boy, and at once a paddle was produced, a very beautiful piece of gold enameling and white tracery, and the offender was smartly spanked while all looked on with greatest fascination. Beauty felt a fluttering in her heart. If she were to be humiliated like that, punished so immediately and ignominiously for clumsiness, she didn't know how she could bear it. To be displayed was one thing. Here she had some grace. But she could not endure the thought of being held by her ankles as the boy was. She could see only his back and the paddle flashing down again and again on his reddening buttocks. He held his hands obediently on the back of his neck, and as he was let down on his hands and knees, the young page with the paddle drove him quickly with a series of loud blows towards the queen, where the young culprit, his buttocks very red, bowed his head and kissed the queen's slipper. The queen had been in fast conversation with the prince. She was a mature woman, very full-blown, but it was from her, obviously, that the prince had gotten his beauty. She turned almost indifferently, her eyes darting back to the prince and motioning for the young slave to rise a little. She brushed back his hair affectionately. But then, in the same indifferent manner, never withdrawing herself from the prince, she made a motion to the page, with a quick frown, that the boy was again to be punished. The lords and ladies nearest applauded with mock scolding gestures, and then obviously enjoyed it very much as the page put his foot on the second step of the dais before the throne and hoisted the disobedient slave up over his knee and again, in full view of everyone, soundly spanked him. A long row of dancers obscured the view for a moment, but again and again Beauty caught glimpses of the unfortunate boy, and she could see that as the paddle came down, he was having a more and more difficult time bearing it. He struggled just a little in spite of himself, and it was also quite obvious that the page who delivered the paddlings was very much enjoying it. His young face was flushed, and he was biting his lips slightly, and he drove the paddle down unnecessarily hard, it seemed, and Beauty felt she hated him. She could hear the lord beside her laughing. There was a little loose crowd about her now, men and women drinking, talking idly. The dancers moved in a long chain, performing their fluid and graceful movements. "So, you see you aren't the only helpless little creature in this world," said the gray-eyed lord. "And does it soothe you to see the tribute that belongs to your sovereigns? You are the first tribute for the prince, and I think that you shall have to set a fierce example. The young slave you saw, Prince Alexei, is very much a favorite of the queen, or he wouldn't be dealt with so lightly." Beauty saw that the paddling had stopped. Once again, the slave was on his hands and knees and kissing the feet of the queen as the page waited in attendance. Now the slave's buttocks were very red. Prince Alexei, Beauty thought. It was a lovely name, and he too was of royal blood and high birth. Why, of course, all of them were. It was a delightful thought. What if they had not been, and she were the only princess? She stared at his buttocks. There were obvious welts on them and little patches that seemed much redder than the rest. And as the young slave prince kissed the queen's feet, Beauty could see also his scrotum between his legs, dark, hairy, and mysterious. It struck her how dreadfully vulnerable he seemed, being a boy, in ways she had never considered. But he had been released or forgiven. He rose to his feet and brushed his auburn curly hair out of his eyes and back from his cheek. And she saw his face stained with tears and reddened too. Yet he had about him a marvelous dignity. He took the pitcher handed him without complaint, and gracefully he moved among the standing guests, filling their goblets. He was only a few paces from Beauty, and drawing ever closer, and she could hear how the men and women teased him. "Another paddling, and you are so wretchedly clumsy," said a very tall, blonde-haired lady in a long green gown, with diamonds on her fingers, and she pinched his red cheek as, with his eyes down, he smiled. His penis was hard and erect as before, rising up thick and motionless from a nest of dark, curly hair between his legs. Beauty could not stop herself from looking at it. As he came nearer, she held her breath.
"Come here, Prince Alexei," said the lord with the gray eyes. He snapped his fingers, and then, taking a white handkerchief, he had the boy moisten it with the wine.
The boy was so near now, Beauty might have touched him.
And the lord took the moistened handkerchief and pressed it to Beauty's lips.
It felt good and cool and tantalizing, but she could not help but look up at the obedient boy prince who stood waiting, and she saw him looking at her.
And though his face was still slightly pink, and there were tears on his cheeks, he smiled at her.